rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hi, everybody. This is The Ruck, the most praised, the most brilliant, the most consistent, and the longest running podcast. This is our pod number 67,433. At least that's how it feels sometimes. We've just had, before we came on air, the traditional 2.5 hours of IT fun. This week featuring Owen Slott saying, "What the effing hell have I done with this?" We're joined by Owen Slott and crossing the river for a rare visit south of the river, Adam Hathaway. The only reason he used to come south of the river was to meet the Cray twins several years ago at their peak. It's been an amazing weekend. We have a brand new champion of the Premier 15s, the women's competition. Harlequins have finally beaten Saracens. And joking apart, if anyone wants to know what a real rugby report reads like or looks like, you really should read Owen on the final today. Absolutely brilliant, if I may say so, Slotty.
Oh, thanks, mate.
Not at all. It is absolutely brilliant.
Those Cray twins, were they second row Hathers, or where did they play?
Well, they were north of the river for starters.
You used to see them in The Blind Beggar, didn't you? Okay. Lawrence can't be with us this week. We were hoping he'd join us from our Devon studios. But because we imposed a ban on any discussion of Chelsea winning the European Cup, he sulked off and refused to come on. So there's just the three of us this week. Also, on a personal note, my Maidenhead Iron Maidens played their first ever game. I must mention that. We lost. The ladies played heroically. We were up against a ruck regular in Nigel Botherway and his Tamisians team. And Botherway's tactic of asking us to play on a pitch that was 6 miles long and 4 miles wide seemed to suit his team. Well done, hard luck ladies. Owen, Harlequins Saracens, you describe it as: this was a thunderous and riveting final. It was a showpiece of quality and nail-biting entertainment. Can you expand on that?
God, it was a great day, Jonesy. It was a real hardcore final. And if you've been following the Premier 15s over the last few months, you'll know that the players have enjoyed their law variations, that's given way to a more running rugby and more handling rugby, and has slightly toned down the forward battle. Well, in the final yesterday, there was none of that whatsoever. It was a proper war up front. It was won by Harlequins forwards, but it was all about heart and soul and character and courage, and it had a sort of an epic kind of finish. So these games are 70 minutes long, 56th minute, two Harlequins women, two of their senior players, Abby Ward and Amy Kokane, both got yellow cards. So they were defending defending their lead for 10 minutes with only 13 players on the pitch. Somehow they held out, and it had an epic quality, and it felt a special day to be there. And then at the end, it was almost stolen by the post-match interview of Shauna Brown, the player of the match, who was just so delighted that Harlequins had finally got over the line. I know, it's an emotional occasion, really.
Adam, as much as it pains us to say it, I suppose, it was a Harlequins double on the weekend. Not only were the ladies to win on the Sunday, but we saw an excellent performance by Quins on the Saturday, and which almost led the Harlequins pitch announcer to blow a gasket. We're seeing some great rugby, Hathers, at the moment. Loads of tries. Are we seeing something that's slightly debasing tries, or are we seeing true classics?
Well, that game which we were both at on Saturday, I think Jerry Flannery, the Harlequins defence coach, nailed it when he said, you know, they're not going to win the title playing like that, but they're great going forward. Defence was optional. Maybe the women's defence coach could get in there and give them a go if they can defend with 13 players. No, it was a terrific occasion getting the fans back and everything, but they are great going forward. I saw them described in one paper this morning as the Harlem Globetrotters of rugby. Well, maybe if they score 100 points, they might win the title.
You know, I'm always a little bit worried about 56, 55 games. I actually thought there was a lot of genuine class, really good young players there. It was just so lovely to see Max Ajomo taking the Ajomo name back into the pro game. I thought it was value for money. If you're a fan, if you brought your dad there, if you come into the first time, or if you brought your kids, I actually thought there was some great rugby, didn't you? As well as a couple of defensive errors.
Do you boys think that there's seriously a chance that Quins can play like that and topple one of the other top three in the playoffs? I mean, surely that's not going to win you a title.
I'll tell you what, I find myself slightly at divergence now. I mean, I don't think they're favourites by any stretch of the imagination. They're going to have to go away somewhere horrible in the semi-final. But it's not as if they haven't got words there, you know, sort of go through a scrum and come out the other side, as if the other lot didn't exist. And Don Brandt was his usual self. They got some players there, so I don't think that's a foregone conclusion. I really don't. Again, we'll come back to that. But Owen, in a few weeks' time, you and I are going to South Africa, and we're looking forward to it up to a point. Yesterday, the South African president, Cyril Ramaphosa, came out and portrayed a real downer in terms of the COVID situation over there. 11 p.m. to 4 a.m. curfew. Well, the 4 a.m. curfew is not going to affect us very much, but restaurants, bars and gyms shut at 10 o'clock. No fans in games, but mainly the virus is surging. It's gone up by 66% in 2 weeks. Only 1.5% of the population, that's not 1.5 million, only 1.5% of the population has been vaccinated. Should we be now worried about the Lions tour with this latest presidential statement?
I've been trying to get my head around this. What would it take to cancel the tour? Because the tour as a health danger is, they've limited the health dangers as far as it can go, really, haven't they? I mean, there's going to be bubbles all around. There's no fans. The travel's been brought to almost nothing. It's not a proper tour. It's just Joburg, Cape Town, Joburg. So as the virus soars, to what extent are we putting people's lives at risk? So I think, Jonesy, that maybe they would have to, if it gets worse, maybe you get to a stage where they can't play the warm-up series in South Africa unless they tell every team they play against they've got to be in a bubble for X number of weeks beforehand. You can put the box in a bubble, and you could keep the Lions in Europe and get them to play a few warm-up games over here. I'm sure that could be organised. But I don't think they can cancel it now. What do you think? How much worse would it have to get for them to cancel it?
We're reporters, okay? We're going to report. But I think that when things start surging, you say viruses are surging, then you think, well, blimey, you know, we're going to spend all our time locked down totally. Otherwise, there's going to be danger to the players and to fellow visitors. So, you know, when virus is surging, then I don't think that anything is safe. I really don't. Look, I'm not being gloomy. I really do hope it's on. I don't really want to be in a bubble with you and my journalist colleagues, as I don't like any of you very much. But I think that it's now seriously getting very difficult. I really do.
I think that, what are we, 4 weeks out? I think you'd be pretty safe in saying it probably won't take the form that it's supposed to, even at the moment.
What do you mean it won't take the form it's supposed to?
Well, the itinerary we've got at the moment, I can't see that lasting. Can you?
Why? Because there's too many. They'll be playing too many teams and therefore exposing. Yeah, yeah. So what do you think they'll do? They just limit it to a test series then, or?
Well, it could do, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean that really is.
That's not
close
good,
to the low, but that's a struggle. It's not a Lions 2 then, and how the heck do you make your case to get in the Lions test team when there's nowhere to make your case? So
can we just rewind a minute, Jones? Just a bit disappointed to say that you don't like your media colleagues and you don't want to be in a bubble with them.
Yeah,
I mean that's, I don't know. I just think after a number of years touring together, I thought we'd got over all our problems, but they're still out there, are they?
Well, they surface on tours. There's no doubt about that. They surface on tours. Some people go out there and they don't buy a drink in the whole 2 months. Etc. Some people never go to press conferences, but I promise to go this time. anyway, that's the lines for now. I hope we haven't depressed you and not depressed the idea of you watching great rugby over the summer. Let's just go back to the girls and your favourite player of the day, in Shauna Brown. Shauna is front row forward for England and for Harlequins. Absolutely brilliant spokesman for a woman for the game. And she was saying on the weekend, Owen, as you quoted her, this is not just about rugby. This is not just about sport. It is about women, and it is about women and putting us on a platform. Are they finally now getting the recognition that they have deserved for so long and typified by the words of Shauna Brown?
Well, I'd probably say no, because of all the my fellow rugby correspondents, love them all as I do. There were only two of us there. I mean, the other papers covered them, but I thought it was something that the rugby correspondents themselves should be at. So no, they're not getting completely. But I tell you one. So I quoted that quote you read out from Shauna Brown. I put up at the top of my match report. But for me, one of the signs of why yesterday's game was significant was because I have found that when I've covered and written about women's rugby, it's been too often the story has been about, this is women's rugby and what do we think of women's rugby and is it catching up with the men and are we supporting it and how is it development going, and you're talking about it as an issue itself rather than the game itself. Whereas yesterday, if Shauna Brown hadn't opened her mouth and said what she said, I probably wouldn't have written any of that stuff. I'd have just written a match report, because it was, in its own right, it was a really, really good game. And I thought that was the statement of where the women's game has come, is because I wasn't sitting there going, oh, we must do this, or it's, you know, the women's game is catching up.
And you're known as the king of Fleet Street. You understand newspapers as well as anyone I've come across, especially tabloids. It's not quite yet reached what you might call the tabloid perception. Would you say that's true, or is it on the way?
No, it's not on the way at all. I've had a flick through all the papers this morning. It's hardly mentioned in the Red Tops. The one thing I would say about Shauna Brown is, when one of the world's leading tennis players is refusing to speak to the media or threatening to speak to the media, I think it's quite refreshing to see him interview yesterday.
Yeah, sure. I agree with that. I also think that in the women's game and the men's game now, there is so few characters allowed to shine through because of media policies and people just miffed with the media. But they're just great characters in there. You know, we saw obviously Shauna, Rachel Burford finally gets her hands on the trophy. They all speak well. Last week, I spent some time with Leanne Riley, the scrum half, Harlequin scrum half, and these girls are just fantastic ambassadors. But Owen, I totally agree with what you say. Sometimes everyone, including journalists from women journalists, they cover everything as if it is a means to an end. Sometimes you should just cover these things as great matches and leave the rest to, leave the rest to fate and to people's impressions. Is a great match, and why would you go on further than that?
Also, Steve, there's one thing the men's game could learn from women's is that interview with Shauna Brown. I mean, how many times have we done a post-match and walked away and thought there's nothing to say there?
Absolutely. So let's not say women's game's got a lot to learn from the men's. What about vice versa?
Steve, would this be a good time to mention the name Henry Slade? Because we just said, the men's players don't speak up much or say anything, don't say very much like Shauna Brown did. So Henry Slade gave that interview to our rivals, Teraf, and Henry Slade said that he was an anti-vaxxer in the interview, which you may disagree with, and I think probably 99% of people probably do. I disagree with it completely. But having voiced an opinion, within 24 hours, a statement had come out in his name retracting what he was saying. So are we actually allowed to have an opinion? We're allowing our players to have an opinion.
Good point. Well, what do you answer your own question? That we surely we should be allowing them to have an opinion.
Well, I mean, I think it's a fascinating subject. I would like, freedom of speech. Christ with the media. Yes, I do believe in the freedom of speech. But is it clever or safe for a role model or someone that kids look up to or other people look up to? To be voicing opinions that might influence them? I mean, maybe we should turn to the medic on this podcast, Adam. Adam, yeah. Hathaway. I know, Adam. Do you think is it okay for someone to voice an opinion which could be regarded as dangerous in a way?
Of course, Henry Slade's allowed to voice his opinions. I think everyone should be allowed to voice their opinions. But what has been left out of some of the reporting is one of the quotes in that original interview was, because of his medical condition anyway, he's a diabetic, as we know, and I think this whole thing was to promote diabetes awareness. He's had issues with other vaccinations before, so he's making his choice based on his own health.
Oh, and do you allow anyone to say anything about any issue, racial, et cetera? But, I mean, Henry Slade, first of all, is a bloody good bloke. He's unlucky not to be on the Lions tour. I think he's one of those players that Eddie Jones has put a career into reverse by never using him properly. But
just on Henry and the Lions, maybe this is another one for Dr. Hathaway, but if Bundyaki was injured tomorrow and Henry was the next on the list, is he threatening his participation by refusing to have the vaccine or actually hasn't refused? We have to get that right by considering not having the vaccine. Should he be allowed to go?
He can't go in all honesty unless he has the vaccine, because then you're really making a difficult situation for the rest of the team. Absolutely horrendous. So you've got to do right by your teammates.
Well, I'd like to just clarify my position here that if the bars don't open beyond 10 p.m., then I'm not having my second vaccine, okay, so I won't be able to go.
Hi, I'm Jane Garvey.
And I'm Fee Glover.
Off Air with Jane and Fee is going live.
We are taking to the stage at the amazing Crucible Theatre in Sheffield on Friday, the 31st of May.
It'll be a night full of surprises. We'll have a special guest, we'll involve you in the audience, and we'll embarrass ourselves. You really won't want to miss it.
Well, the surprise is we don't yet know what's in it, so it genuinely is a night of surprises.
Well, you've surprised me already. It's not just us. Our live show is part of an exciting new podcast festival called Crosswires, which is taking place in some really amazing venues across Sheffield from the 31st of May to the 2nd of June.
So other podcasters that you'll be able to see include Katie Price, Catherine Ryan, Ramesh Ranganathan and the original Adam Buxton. But there's also a whole host of free fringe events, family shows, surprise acts and after parties that Jane and I haven't yet been invited to.
I'm sure it's only a matter of time. Head to crosswires.live for tickets and more information.
Let's just go back to the Premiership. We've had a very, very high scoring and interesting end to this season. We've now got two games left for everybody as they try to jostle for position in the top four. Owen, yesterday we saw Exeter make a huge statement, 74 points against a decent side like Newcastle. Does that suggest to you that they're timing it perfectly as usual?
It would appear so. That's not the only big win they've had recently. They've had a couple of them. But they've also got the advantage of having been there and done it. You know, they've been through this process. They've won it twice. They've been in losing finals and learned their lessons from there. And as we know, that's a process to get to know how to win. And they've got that advantage over the others as well.
Sale, we've had this question before, but we keep on thinking, well, they're not quite there. They might fall away. They are still going strong and they're getting bigger and meaner. And now they've got Manu Tuilagi back. We've always thought it's going to sort of be between Bristol and Exeter. But now, are there three or even four genuine contenders for the title now?
I reckon Sale could give this a real crack. There's still a possibility they could get home semi-final, if my maths are right. Yeah. But what they did on Friday, I mean, that was a pretty all bells and whistles Bristol team. And it was fantastically 0-0 at halftime, which is great to see. It was still a great game, even though people might look at it and think, oh, you know, when you served up 90 points and 80 points in every other game, they might think that was terrible. It was an absolutely compelling first half. They played great in the second half. I think they could give someone a real crack.
So what you're saying is it doesn't have to be 96-95 to be a great game. It can be 0-0.
Exactly. And the other one thing I would say, in Harlequins did run Exeter and Bristol close away from home in the regular season. The Exeter game, Exeter weren't fully loaded, but Bristol were, and they gave them a good crack as well.
Yeah, and it's interesting because last day of the regular season, Sale have to go to Exeter. The question is, they'll already be guaranteed then, I would have thought, they would be guaranteed a top four place, may not be guaranteed a home tie. So that'll be interesting to see whether Sale actually field a team down there or just take it as a rest week. So it's interesting. Slotty, can we look beyond Exeter and possibly Bristol, or either of the other two taking your fancy as possible contenders?
I'm with Hathers in that Sale seem to have a momentum. So I'm impressed with them. I mean, Harlequins is a bit of a romantic story, isn't it? With the old where you can score 10 tries and we'll score 11 type approach. The problem with Quins, though, is that they need to try and tighten up, because you're not going to win it unless you tighten up. But the game they're practicing every week is still this Harlem Globetrotters version. So I can't see them getting through a semi-final, but it'll be fun watching them try.
Okay, Adam, this just slightly a divergence as well here, because you know they did put Bath to the sword in up front. Adam, we talked about Brown being a great character. What about the other front row man of the week from Harlequins? Joe Marlett just is the prop and the character that keeps on giving.
He is on and off the field. I mean, he's in the form of his life. He intimated that he wanted to go on the Lions tour. He couldn't have been a million miles away. I'm not sure what England will do with him in the summer if he decides he wants to play, but he can be good value off the pitch. Sometimes he plays the clown too often off the pitch, impresses, but we've all had that with him. But he's a good addition to the game, that's for sure.
I think we know why Joe wasn't picked for the Lions, don't we? I mean, he's admitted it himself that he...
Oh, yeah, possibly, yeah.
He wasn't a good tourist in New Zealand in 2017. That he didn't do the good dirt trackers thing, and he was a bit narky and whingy off the side and that. So, and he regrets that himself. He's been quite open about it. Said he wished he could go on this tour so he could tour properly and be a good tourist rather than a cynical tourist.
Guys, I'd like to go on to one more topic, which is really bugging me. TMO, that bugs everybody I know, but just recently, the TMO function appears to be taken over by a gang, by an endless debate, by marching across the field looking at various replays, and it's become a little self-righteous and a bit cloying for me, and I thought that on the weekend, the TMO did not work at all well. I thought there was arguments there. There were things they... There is no guarantee, even with 20 cameras, in my opinion, that the TMO gets things right. And we're going back further and further, and it's taking longer and longer. The two-hour game is now more often than not. Adam, do you find that on the weekend TMO was a bit of a pain?
Yeah, the one thing with the TMO is when it was brought in, everybody said, you know, we've got to get these decisions right, blah, blah, blah. Taking it back, you know, five phases for a knock-on of 3/4 of an inch is ridiculous. But quite often, I don't like the TMO instructing the referee that they've seen such and such. It should be there for the ref's benefit. They are technically a referee's assistant, so they should stick to being an assistant, not being a sort of dictator in the box. And also, sometimes they get it wrong anyway, even when they see the tapes.
I just like your suggestion, Jonesy, that the TMOs have been taken over by some sort of gap. I mean, is that sort of fueled by, I don't know, the All Blacks or Nigel Ray or some sort of insidious sort of influence on the game? Or
what do you mean insidious influence? Do you mean the owner of the Great Saracens Club?
What I mean is
that now for the big games, a gang of referees do it. It's not a TMO anymore, just a bona fide TMO. It's a top referee. So you get four top referees all debating. It's like the Court of Appeal judgment. All they miss is the wigs. So I just think that they should keep the TMO, not independent, but they should just make him someone who's a television match official. That's what he does. And the gang comes from everybody. You know, when you get four referees there, or even five, all of whom have refereed 50 internationals, it does sound more like the High Court or the Old Bailey than a rugby match. And I think that it's taken over just a little bit too much.
Can I say something sensible on this?
Yes.
One thing that has happened during COVID is that the traditional tier of TMOs have been underused or hardly used at all, because the Premiership wanted to keep the number of officials travelling to the minimum. So that's why you've seen people like Wayne Barnes in doing the TMO job more than the usuals like Rowan Kitt, for instance, who you'd see at a Premiership game every week. So I think that might be one reason why.
Okay. That's it. That's very interesting. It'd be interesting to see now that the restrictions are going down whether they get the TMOs back. But I didn't know that, and thank you for that. Well-researched point of information.
I'm glad you think I said something interesting, James.
No, you did see something interesting.
Yeah,
three weeks ago, I think it was. Sorry, you're always interesting, my friend.
That's really kind of you.
There's just two games left of the Premiership. Let's just go out on a limb a little tiny bit and say who's going to win the Premiership and who's going to be in the final. Dr. Hathaway, your Premiership finalists and your Premiership winner.
Premiership finalists are... let's go out on a limb. Say Exeter and Sale. Exeter win it.
Owen Slot.
So I'm struggling with that. Exeter and Sale are going to play each other in the semis, I would have thought. So I'm not going to say Exeter Sale. I mean, that's just what I'm guessing. I think the final will be Exeter Bristol, and I think that Exeter will win it.
Come on, track, man. I'm just looking at the maths.
That is very difficult to argue with, because Exeter have been slightly low profile of late. And Bristol have led all the way and done wonderfully. But it is a bit like, do you remember that guy, Dave Wattle, in one of the Olympics, who you never saw him in a race till the last 3 yards and when he came late? Well, I think that probably is what Exeter are going to do.
Dave Wattle. What did he do?
800 metres.
All right.
Yeah, but you never saw him till the last 4 strides and he won the gold medal.
Good old Dave, huh?
Keep up, Slotty. Will you?
Well, I thought I was an Olympic specialist, but I'll have to do my research on Big Dave.
Is there any sport I don't know all about? Honestly, there's not many. Okay, it's time for God or Goddess of the Week. And we'll start with Adam Hathaway.
Okay, just an honourable mention. I took my kids up to do the Spurs Skywalk on Thursday, where you walk around the stadium hooked up like Chris Bonington. And we were taken up there by a woman called Abby, who was a brilliant guide and got us all down safely. So she was a contender. But the winner is a guy who's played 300 games for Northampton, 300th on Saturday, all in the front row. Danny Kerr did it for Harlequins recently, earlier this season, but they was playing at scrum half. So my God of the Week is Alex Waller.
That's a good one. And an honourable mention for Danny Kerr, who's playing out of his skin. Owen, God or Goddess?
Well, I was going to say Dave Wattle, who is the 1972 Olympic 800-metre gold medalist.
1968?
No, 72.
Oh, 72, sorry.
And well-known for wearing a golf cap while running.
Yeah.
So
he also went around with a golf trolley.
Yeah. He went around with a golf trolley, a set of irons, and he still won in 1972. Yeah. And I was going to say him, because I don't think we've mentioned him enough on this show, but I will revert to a player we've talked about already on this podcast, to the magnificent Shauna Brown, who was the player of the day yesterday in the final. Magnificent on and off the pitch. Quite a stupendous player. So she's my goddess of the week.
Okay, well, congratulations to Harlequins. My goddesses are both great leaders, great players. Rachel Burford deserves all the credit in the world for everything she's done for the women's game. It was desperate to see her go off yesterday and wonderful to see her take the title. Also, I'd like to, almost jointly with Rachel, nominate Emma McDonald, my own captain, who played so brilliantly yesterday and is such a wonderful leader. Leadership is everything, as I prove every week on this podcast. Thank you for joining us. Thank you, Dr. Adam Hathaway and Owen Slott. The climax of the season is upon us. The Lions Tour may or may not be upon us. The women's game coming through strongly, not only on the field, but in perceptions of it. And led by Shauna Brown and led by Harlequins. And what a weekend it was. For Harlequin. So, Shauna Brown, Joe Marler, who says that rugby doesn't have great characters? Thank you for listening.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
A little something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional, unprofessional. So if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.